Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Pulse FM and the Studio DNA Podcast Network present What Else with Corey Mann. Hit subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or visit the archives on Apple, Spotify, or Google Play. Part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network.
In January of 2009, I started working at a Christian radio station in South Bend on a Monday, January the 5th. My son's birthday was the 4th. That's how I remember it. The Tuesday of that week would be the day that the record label started calling and finding out that there was a new person. I was new to the industry. I was new to the radio station. They weren't told of that, so we got to know each other pretty quickly. I'm guessing it was either that first week of January or the second week of January that I talked to my next guest, and I could give a lengthy introduction to this person, and we'll probably unpack that. But I found this morning that I thought was very fitting. Bruce Brown on your Facebook page said, "A bromance for the ages." That sums it up right there. That sums it up. My good friend of a decade, but it feels like a lifetime, Chris Hauser.
Thank you for having me. I walk into this with a bit of, not fear, but a little trepidation, I suppose. Just like, wow, we know one another so well. You're a master interviewer in my mind, and I'm just completely thrilled.
You and I, usually on a regular week, will talk somewhere in the ballpark of 2 to 5 times.
Yep.
Like via the phone. We literally go out of our way to talk to one another.
Yeah.
One of those five will be business related, radio station, song related. Other times it's just catching up, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's totally what it is. Yeah.
WSIV, WOIV in Syracuse. Is there any actual recording proof of this air shift?
Dude, I've got a cassette tape. I thought I've played something for you. I've got voice memos in my phone that of me from the early 1980s. And it's so horrible. So horrible. It's like, "Hey, everybody, Chris Hauser here. Here's some music from Mylon LeFevre and Broken Heart." It's just the worst.
When I turned on the microphone for the first time in radio, I became everyone who was my hero in radio. I couldn't find who my voice was for at least a decade. Who were you imitating? Were you grabbing people from Deposit, New York that you'd heard on your alarm clock? Where did it come from?
That's a good question. I grew up in Deposit, New York, a small town near Binghamton, and there were no radio stations in Deposit. And I had to ask, it was a toll call. Kids, just trust me when the old man tells you that there was such a thing as a toll call at one time. And I would listen to the radio constantly, WAAL, The Whale.
WAAL, The Whale.
An AOR FM station in Binghamton. I would have to get permission from my parents to call The Whale and request a song because it was going to cost them money for me to actually make a phone call to a radio station. On a trip in 1975 in Texas, we were in Big Spring, Texas, where the Rattlesnake Roundup happens every year. My uncle, Jim, was a cop, and it was a small enough town. Everybody knew him. And he knew that I was just so obsessed with radio and obsessed with music that he took me over to that, to a radio station and visited that radio station. And that might've been the first time I was actually in a room in a studio at age 15 and was like, wow. 3 years later, 4 years later, I started working in radio.
When you would make those toll calls, what were you calling for?
I mean, I might have been requesting a song. I know in 75 in Big Spring, Texas, I was obsessed with the song At 17 by Janis Ian.
I learned the truth at 17, their love was meant for beauty queens. In high school, girls with clear skin smiles who married young and then retired. The Valentines I never knew, the Friday night charades of youth were spent on one more beautiful. At 17, I learned the truth.
Who went on to write a number one song called What About the Love by that Amy Grant had on Lead Me On, which I worked in 88 at Mer Records. Anyway, I was obsessed with Janis Ian, so I remember requesting that. But I just remember wanting to talk to the DJs on the air, and I was always wanting to ask them about a record or how soon could they play that record. Oh, sorry, man, we just played it an hour ago. We can't play it again so quickly. Stuff like that.
How'd you get the job in Syracuse?
I was a radio TV major at a community college in Syracuse. And one of my professors, Rob Gagne, came to me one day in the fall of 79, I guess, early 79, and said, Chris, Sue Boehner over at WYRD, that was our first call letters of that AM station, WYRD. We called it Word Radio, but behind the scenes, of course, you know, phonetically, it was Weird Radio.
WYRD. Weird Radio. Let's get weird.
He said to me, hey, I know that you're one of them reborn again types, and Sue Boehner is looking for some part-time work down there. You should go down. I think you could do that job on a weekend. And I was like, great. So I went down and had an interview, and they listened to my voice, and I didn't have an air check or anything like that. No way. No way. Although I'd been in radio production my first year of college there and had a show. I had a little radio show on the radio station there at the college. Yep.
Was it the Chris Hauser Experience?
No. When I went away to school, I'd been a Christian for a couple of years, but kind of struggling, small town, not really serious about my faith. When I moved to Syracuse, I met a couple of people in my first week there who were so on fire for Jesus and loved Christian rock music. I basically had no experience with Christian rock music. Someone had given me a love song album or let me listen to a love song album, and it just, man, it just did not compare to Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd and Queen and Black Sabbath. It was just way too lame. But when I got to college, all of a sudden they were like, hey, here's a Resurrection Band album.
Who needs rock and roll? Who needs songs about saving your soul? Plastic music, plastic food, cellophane tubes for that synthetic mood. You got your inspiration from a vending machine. It's an audio starvation diet. Mannequins on a shopping spree.
And all of a sudden I was like, oh my gosh, this stuff is like kind of competitive. And these people were so in love with God, and they just had something I really wanted in on. And so I ended up, my radio show at that radio station in college ended up becoming a Christian rock show. And oh my gosh, I was just an evangelist, an annoying evangelist all the time.
The Who, Kiss, Cheap Trick, Black Sabbath.
Mott the Hoople.
Mott the Hoople. Where would you buy their music at in deposit?
There was a drugstore that would get in a few records every week. I remember buying Born to Run there. I'm going to admit, there were times that I would buy records and take them home and tape them, and then I'd bring them back to the store. I'm confessing this for the first time maybe in my life. Corey, I don't know what's bringing this out of me, but I remember taping Born to Run and then bringing it back and saying it's got a scratch in it. It was a money thing. I love the record. It's probably in my top 20 of all time, but I was just a poor high school kid, you know, without a job, blah, blah, blah. Anyway.
When did you transition from this side of the mic to the other side where you would be calling people like me trying to get songs on the radio?
I was in radio from 1979 to 1987 in Syracuse. When I left that job in Syracuse as a 27-year-old, I was making $12,500 a year gross. All of my part-timers were minimum wage, which was $3.35 an hour during that time period.
I remember it well.
And most of those people in the mid-80s were my friends who came in to work for me at the radio station because it was not automated. Like radio stations now, there could be weeks where no person is actually in the building because they're programming from home. They're even running stuff off their smartphones. There was none of that in my town in Syracuse in the 80s. And so I also like to say that I worked in a double wide trailer in a swamp in East Syracuse, because when it rained too hard, it would flood and we would have to park outside of that little fishbowl that the radio station was in. Starting around 1983, when I started getting those phone calls from record companies, which was the highlight of my week, I loved talking music with all of those promoters. I just loved it. And the music was everything that I was so passionate about. That's what made me not a good radio guy, because all I did was want to communicate all the ephemera and all the silly little trivia about every record. That's what I spent my time on the radio talking to the audience about. And it had to be me appealing to maybe three people. And our audience was 10 people. So it's like every time we would get knocked off the air, like lightning would strike and we'd get knocked off the air, some of us would go like, the phone would ring and we'd go like, oh, there's our listener. Let's go assure them that we're working on getting back on the air. So starting in 83, I've started to figure out, I do not want to be in this job very much any longer. I want to go elsewhere. I'd love to go work for a record company. And I'd started to make my desires known to each one of these promoters. And I'd be like, man, if you see me being able to fit in somewhere here, that would be amazing. And in 87, I got to the point where I was so frustrated. I was like, I'm going to go to GMA Week that culminated in the Dove Awards. I'm going to go to GMA Week. I'm going to pay my way just to meet everybody face to face and do whatever I could to actually make the case in person. Please hire me. Please. I don't know how much longer I can last here at this radio station. That was April of 87. And by September, Mer Records, hottest label in the land, they were reaching out to me saying, we think we might have a job position available in LA. And that was September. My wife was 1 month pregnant with our first kid. And I went out and did the interview at the label, got the job, and we moved out there mid to late October of 1987 at Mer.
Deposit, New York to Los Angeles, California is one massive jump. Was there convincing involved with Linda, or was it a let's go? Let's just go.
That's actually a great question. We were so stressed out about this job. Linda is pregnant. The job opportunity comes up and she and I begin talking about it. She is really resistant to moving clear across the country. I said, why can't you see? We've been married 5 years. I said, why can't you see that this is my dream? This is me following my dream. And she said, I don't know that I can trust a man who would move me that far away from my parents. And I said, okay, let's stop it right here. Let's take a day or two to just pray, go to our respective corners, not talk about it, not argue about it. Let's just pray. We came back together 2 days later, had a meeting. We were like, okay, let's talk. And I went first. And I said, Linda, the most important thing to me is you. The second most important thing is that baby that's inside of you. And if you cannot envision this, then we're going to stay here. I'm going to end up probably going to get a job selling shoes or cars or insurance. I can't last much longer at the radio station. Linda said, I will not be able to live with myself if we wonder in 10 years, you're in a dead end job. We're stuck here in this town and we've got kids and we always wonder, what would it have been like if we had grabbed that ring, if we had grabbed for that golden ring? And so we agreed together that we were going to pursue Murr Records in LA.
And how long were you in Los Angeles?
I was there for 3 years. We call it our 3-year Disneyland experience. I really came into my gifting, Corey. I was working some of the greatest records of all time in Christian music. Amy Grant, Lead Me On, Rust Half, the solo, the self-titled record, and then Rust Half, The Way Home. 3 albums by The Choir, Brian Duncan, Anonymous Confessions of a Lunatic Friend. There's a title for you.
What was the very first record you worked?
Probably the last Leslie Phillips single ever worked to Christian radio. I came in on the tail end of a bunch of artists, David Meese, Mylon LeFevre. Those were all the final singles of those artists on that label. Not a lot of people at the label cared a whole lot about any of that, but Amy Grant was coming. Lead Me On was coming within a few months. The person who hired me, who was my boss, she was gone within 3 months. So the radio department was mine at Murr Records starting in pretty much January of 88.
What was the very first song that you had second doubts about, but you had to toe the line because it was a Murr song?
I mean, I worked a song by Bashing the Code called the B-I-B-L-E. And it was like this glam rock version of the kids' Sunday school song. They were, you know, kind of a Christian party band and lots of glam, lots of makeup. That was a pretty cheesy song. I love those guys. I mean, I care deeply for those people and they might look back on it too, but there weren't a lot of songs and records that I really didn't like being around at Murr in 3 years. The A&R was pretty amazing. Tom Willett, Dan Postuma, Lynn Nichols, 3 brilliant A&R minds gave us some of the most amazing music of all time in Christian music in those 3 years, literally, that I was there.
You just posted on social media that you're celebrating 30 years in Nashville. Tell me about the jump from Los Angeles to Nashville.
Thank you. We were committed after having our bi-coastal baby conceived in Syracuse, born in LA. We were committed to Linda not having to go and work, that she would be able to stay home. I got a raise within three months of my landing out there. But listen, when we moved to Murr in LA, I was making $12.5 a year as a PD at that radio station. Murr Records offered me $18,000 a year. And Linda and I were like, $18,000? I mean, what are we going to do with all the extra money? This is going to be a whopper of a savings account. And once you get to LA in 1987 and get paid $18,000 a year, you figure out what you do. You barely exist. Car insurance, rent, and food. That's about it. But it's always sunny in 78, so there's that going on. I had a number of raises, but we still, in those 3 years, ultimately, it was a bit of a challenge for us to really make ends meet. Warner Alliance, the gospel division of Warner Brothers, that had a huge explosive debut with the Winans, the 4 brothers, Take Six, and Donna McElroy, hired a radio guy, then let him go. And then it was kind of the news, like someone's going to get that job. Who's going to get that job? And I was like, you know what? I love this company and I love this roster. And there's an Amy Grant, a Heart in Motion album coming soon. They even had me give some feedback on, I have a cassette here in the room of early demos of the Heart and Motion record from Amy. And I spoke into that and I was really looking forward to it. And I was in a place of great honor in the, at the label, but I just didn't feel like I could get a bunch more money out of them as a radio promoter in 1990. And so we made the move in October of 90 to move to Nashville.
So you're at Warner Alliance up until 1998 and you wrote in social media that job went away. So how long was the Warner Alliance job?
I was there from fall of 90 to March of 98.
What does that job went away mean?
They actually, the label ended up just kind of fizzling. The in the Warner system, they moved all of those properties in the Warner Alliance system over to Atlantic. So in the Warner system, there was Warner Elektra Atlantic. You know it as WEA Distribution at one time. Warner Brothers was bankrolling Warner Alliance. So then the label folded and some of that music went over and some of the energy of that went over to the Atlantic arm of Warner Elektra Atlantic. So then starting around that time period, Atlantic Christian kind of came out and they had Plus One and POD. That's how Atlantic Christian exploded in the late 90s and early 2000s. And so, but the label, they let me go in March of 98. And right away I started taking independent jobs. Warner ended up hiring me for something else on a part-time basis. And then Integrity found me. They were launching a label called Vertical Music, which was more artist-oriented with Daryl Evans and Lincoln Brewster, eventually 10 Shekel Shirt. I hit the ground running in 98 doing indie promotion. The week I got let go from Warner, Deborah Evans Price, who is a writer, just such a lovely, lovely person, a good friend, she called me that next week. She had a weekly column for Billboard and it was called Higher Ground. So she was just writing news on the industry every week, Christian music industry. And she called me, was like, Chris, what's next? What's next for you? And I truly took this as a friend calling me out of concern. I said, I don't know, Deborah, but all I can tell you is cutting edge worship music of Delirious, Kevin Prosh, Waterdeep, and Daryl Evans, that music is captivating my soul and changing my life. Where I'd had some real heartbreak at Warner in those 8 years that I worked there. That's what I told her. I said, I don't know what it's about, but I just want to be about getting worship music more known in our industry. And so a week later, Billboard comes out with her Higher Ground article, and it's all about me and Chris Hauser's next move in the industry. So she was interviewing me. I thought it was just a call out of concern. And so at Integrity Music in Mobile, Danny McGuffey runs out into the hallway waving Billboard around going, Chris Hauser's talking about our artists. Chris Hauser's talking about our records. Somebody get him on the phone and get him down here. So within a week, within a day, somebody from Integrity that was working there who I've known for years calls me and goes, hey, we've got a new label launching and you're a free agent now. Can we fly you down here and let you listen to a record or two? And I was like, sure. And so they flew me down. I had a driver. The driver picked me up, took me to a studio. We sat down with Daryl Evans, Lincoln Brewster, Paul Mills, the producer, and Kevin from the label. And we listened top to bottom to the Freedom album by Daryl Evans, which had songs like Let the River Flow, Your Love is Extravagant, Good to Me, Trading My Sorrows. We got to the end of the record. I cried numerous times. I was so deeply touched by it. They said, do you think we can get something like this on the radio? I said, I really do. I'd like to die trying. They were like, okay, you're hired. That's how my career started.
You said very high highs, very low lows. What's defined as a very high high?
Breaking Michael English in 1992 on his debut record that Brown Bannister produced. The label actually waited 18 months for Brown Bannister for his schedule to free up so that he could give the time to produce Michael English's first record. He won numerous Dove Awards in 93 and then swept the Doves in 94 on the strength of that record and then the release of his second album. That was incredible for our scrappy little team to have such a huge, huge explosive debut. Numerous number one songs. And then the low was Michael choosing to walk away from all of that and not wanting to be in Christian music anymore. And it's well documented. I don't have to go any further with that, but that was the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat, all within about 4 or 5 days.
In this restless world made of shifting sand, there's no solid ground where our hope can stand. But our trust in God will stay strong and sure, for it's built on a foundation that's eternally secure. The Son of God is our cornerstone. Jesus is his name, heaven is his throne. He will not be swayed, he will not be moved, and the ones who rest upon him will stay strong and true.
Our faith in him is solid, solid, solid as the rock of ages, solid, solid, solid as the rock.
Vince Ebo, who was in the Charlie Peacock Trio, ended his life after we let him out of his record deal in 93, I think. There was a lot of sadness there. I mean, just enormous, enormous sadness. So some high highs, some very, very low lows. Couple artists that we had signed didn't sign their contracts completely and found ways to get out of their deals with us after we broke them. That was some pretty tough stuff.
What was your first number one song?
Walk Between the Lines by Russ Taff from the self-titled record.
When the night breaks in, I won't spin far away from what I know is real. In this heart of mine, light will shine, for I have found a charm.
And that song, there was so much energy around that record. And Russ was the hottest thing in Christian music, along with Amy Grant, 85, 86, 87. So we released Walk Between the Lines, and it still sounds so good. And it debuts at number one on the CCM update, Christian CHR chart. It stayed there for 12 weeks and then disappeared from the chart. The only number it ever knew at the Christian CHR chart was number one. And that was my first.
The most amount of money spent on a song promotion.
Another confession. I'm going to say this is another confession that has not been said. I don't know if I've ever said this, but Steve Taylor at Warner Alliance, we had a lot of money at Warner Brothers and we spent it. We spent a lot of money. We did a Super Bowl promotion around retail because in the 90s, retail was everything. Retail was way bigger than radio even. We did a promotion with retailers around the country for the Steve Taylor Squint album. And a winner, the winning retailer got to bring a guest and joined Steve and Deb, myself, and Bannerman at the Super Bowl in 94. We were counting on someone to buy those tickets for us the week of the Super Bowl. And the tickets usually go down in price during a Super Bowl week. That week, they went up in price. It was the Bills versus the Cowboys. Yet another, you know, Bills loss. Those poor guys. Might have been the fourth and final Bills loss in a row in 94. The tickets went up, 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 up to the point where each ticket cost $1,400. When I handed out the tickets to everybody on the bus before we went in the stadium in Atlanta, Steve Taylor, the artist whose budget this was all coming out of, looked at the ticket price and the face value, and he goes, $175 per ticket? And I did everything I could to keep as straight a face as possible. And it's still possible that he's not been told that, that each of those tickets ended up costing $1,400 apiece.
Where does band management of Waterdeep fit into this?
I was introduced to Waterdeep by Cademan's Call in 97 with their indie release, Sink or Swim, bright green album cover. And I was blown away by the record. And then I, fall of 97, I promoted a show for them at my church in Nashville, fell in love with them, spent a bunch of time with them. In 98, I got cut loose from the label and then got them a slot at Creation 98, along with Daryl Evans and Lincoln Brewster on the at the Vertical Worship Tent. Jennifer Knapp, who's toured with Waterdeep as indie artists all through the Midwest, was on main stage at lunchtime at Creation, thousands of people. She goes, "Hey, if you guys don't know, Waterdeep is my favorite band, and they're here, and right after I get off stage, they're going to start playing in this Vertical Worship Tent behind me. So join me over there at Waterdeep." And all these hippies come out of nowhere like, "Waterdeep's here? What? Are you kidding?" And so I helped them get that slot and just continued to become friends more and more with them. And then we made a decision to get into business together. Something I swore I'd never do was manage an artist. Too much hand-holding, too much babysitting, not enough money. But I was in a place where I decided, let's try this. I'm just so compelled by these people. I think too, Corey, there was a bit of pride in me at that point of thinking, hey, I broke Cademan's Call. I'm going to go break Waterdeep. It's the same thing. I can go do this. They're going to, because Cademan's Call was, they blew up in 97, 98, 99. They were a force to be reckoned with. And behind Cademan's Call came Andrew Peterson, Bebo Norman, Jason Gray, Waterdeep, Jill Phillips, Andy Gullihorn, Andrew Osenga, The Normals. All these bands came flowing in behind the Cademan's Call explosion of 97 and 98. And Waterdeep could not, it was not the same thing. It's too rough around the edges. Waterdeep, bless them. I love them. They're the greatest band that not enough people know about. But they did not want to fit into the really tight restrictions of the CCM world. And took me and them a couple of years to figure it out. But I got them signed to Squint Entertainment, which had Sixpence None the Richer, Burlap to Cashmere, Chevelle. We had lots of great things in place. But that lasted 2 years. And then, and I guess this is worth saying really quickly, is that I didn't feel like the promotion, the radio promotion for Waterdeep was doing everything that it needed. And I chose to get on the phones and call some old radio friends to work the Waterdeep single called Sweet River Roll.
Homebound Henry, he's got a tumor in his head. Wakes up sweating every morning after dreaming he was dead. He used to think that life was boring, but now that's not the case. He turns to his wife in the evening. He says, "Honey, I'm afraid I'm gonna lose this race." Sweet River Road. Oh,
story. I can't explain it. It was a supernatural experience. But when I was on the phone fighting for Waterdeep, I felt the pleasure of God all over me. Like Eric Little from Chariots of Fire, when he said, I can't explain it, but when I run, I feel God's pleasure. And when I got back on the phone after slogging through management for a year and a half to 2 years, not doing a very good job of it, and I felt the pleasure of God all over me getting Waterdeep played back on the radio, I was like, this is what I'm really good at, man. This is what I love. This gets absolute, utter results right away. This is probably something I need to transition back to.
Five records we must have as vinyl enthusiasts.
Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon from 1973. Led Zeppelin, Physical Graffiti, two of my favorite records of all time. Probably like an Allman Brothers live record. I mean, I think the vinyl is probably pretty warm on Allman Brothers, stuff like that. Give me Bob Dylan, Slow Train Coming. Oh, and Jellyfish, which is now available on vinyl. It was not released on vinyl necessarily, but Jellyfish and probably their first record, Belly Button. Those are all amazing records.
Talk for a few moments about how big of a deal Lead Me On was to the industry, but Lead Me On is to you.
They gave me a cassette demo with all the songs in January of 88. I was the lone radio guy at Mer Records. I loved Amy Grant and played her records on the radio starting in the late 70s, played them all through the 80s. She'd had some crossover success in 85 and 86 with Love Will Find a Way and then the Peter Cetera duet. And she'd done an interview with Rolling Stone and used some phrases that threw some people off in that. And I felt like there were a lot of people who were really questioning Amy and her faith at that time. So when they gave me that cassette, I latched onto a song called Saved by Love.
Laura loves her little family, and she's the kind of one who loves them with her life. But sometimes in the evening, when the world rests on her shoulders, the four walls closing in, she'll close her eyes. She never was in Vogue magazine or on TV. Her husband loves her dearly, and morning shows her clearly. Kiss her little baby girl.
Walked into that meeting next morning with all these upper level executives in the Word team and said, here's what I want to do to release these singles. I said, I want Saved by Love as the first single. And they were like, no, not going to happen. It's Amy Grant. We can do whatever we want. I said, man, listen, I've just come from this world. I just landed here 4 months ago. And here's what I feel like radio kind of is wondering about Amy Grant. And I'd love to just give them a song that just ticks all the boxes, checks all the boxes. And it ended up being, I think, Song of the Year. I mean, it was the number one song of the year in 88. And we ended up having four number one songs on that record. And it was Saved by Love, then Lead Me On, which is so deep and so dense lyrically. And then what about the love? Or then 1974, the song about the revival at Belmont Church when she was a 14-year-old. And then what about the love, the Janis Ian song I mentioned earlier today. And dude, I've listened to Lead Me On hundreds and hundreds of times. CCM Magazine put out a book that was collated and informed by all these different writers and reviewers, critics, and they said the top 100 albums of all time in Christian music, and Lead Me On was number one.
How much do you miss live music?
Oh my gosh. I've locked into some things, even with my therapist recently, about just some of the mourning and sadness that I have of 2020, how much I thrive on being in a crowd of people all hearing the same songs at the same time, singing at the top of my lungs, getting really carried away and feeling it. And that's you and me. We've done it countless times in the last 11 years, and we've been prevented from that this year. And I miss it so deeply. If I'm married and happily married, if I wasn't married, I'd be out in a non-pandemic year. I easily would be out 6 times a week at live shows because I love it. And I buy tickets for people and make sure they're with me, standing next to me or sitting next to me at a concert. It's very, very important to me. And so I'm, you know, hoping for health in 2021.
Do you still enjoy being referred to as a reborn again type?
I mean, great question. Muhammad Ali said, the man who believes at 50 everything that he believed at 20 has wasted 30 years of his life. And so I view faith, I view a lot of things differently than I did when I was 18, 19, 20. I still follow Jesus and still love the red letters and still am informed by God's love for the world and his love and forgiveness. I'm all in. I just don't know as much as I thought I did.
Well, congratulations, my friend. You've made it to the end of this interview.
I kind of thought that I would be, that this would be just us telling inside jokes, but inside stories, but that's only stuff that you and I would appreciate.
We have to have something for another episode.
I've really enjoyed it.
Well, I know you're well-loved in this industry, and you know, we've had this discussion before. If we were to throw around the term best friends, you rank number one, if not all top five in my life. So I appreciate you, and I love you. You are episode 99, and speaking of Amy Grant so many times during this, she's episode 100, which comes up next. So, and because of your friendship, that's what gets my foot in the door with her and her people. So another reason why I love you so much.
Corey, thank you as well. I love you, and I just, it's hard to think about what my life would be like, what it was like before 2009 when you came waltzing in.
And friends are friends forever.
Which I did not play right away.
You've been listening to What Else with Corey Mann, part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. Production elements and voiceovers by audiblegenesis.com. Find complete podcast tools and production at audiblegenesis.com. Find this podcast and older episodes on Apple, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Leave a comment or review, tell a friend, and thank you for listening.
Everybody get out of here. There's a lobster loose. Oh, holy cow, he's loose.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.